Dorothy Co. took off her coat because of the heat. They sat in a line and watched the window like a movie screen. Dorothy Co. was next to Reacher. He asked her, "They didn't go to your place?" She said,
"No, but Mr. Vincent saw one passing the motel about 20 minutes ago. He was watching out the window."
Reacher said, "That was me. I came in that way in the truck I took. There are only 5 of them left now."
"Okay, I understand. But that concerns me a little."
"Why?"
"I would expect at least one of us to have seen at least one of them roaming around somewhere. But no one has, which means they aren't all spread out. They're all bunched up. They're hunting in a pack."
"Looking for me?"
"Possibly."
"Then I don't want to bring them here. Want me to leave?"
"Maybe,"
Dorothy said. "Yes," the doctor said.
"No,"
his wife said. Impasse. No decision. They all turned back to the window and watched the road. It stayed dark. The cloud was clearing a little. There was faint moonlight in the sky. It was almost 1 o'clock in the morning. The motel was closed down for the night, but Vincent was still in the lounge. He was still watching out the window. He had seen the gold Yukon go by. He had recognized it. He had seen it before, many times. It belonged to a young man called John, a very unpleasant person, a bully, even by Duncan's standards. Once he had made Vincent get down on his knees and beg not to be beaten. Beg, like a dog, with limp hands held up, pleading and howling. 5 whole minutes. Vincent had called in the Yukon sighting to the phone tree, and then he had gone back to the window and watched some more. 20 minutes had gone by without incident. Then he saw the 5 men everyone was talking about. Their strange little convoy pulled into his lot. The blue Chevrolet, the red Ford, Seth Duncan's black Cadillac. He knew from the phone tree that someone else was using Seth's car. No one knew how or why. But he saw the guy. A small man slid out of the driver's seat, rumpled and unshaven. Foreign, like people from the Middle East he had seen on the news. Then the 2 men who had roughed him up climbed out of the Chevrolet. Then 2 more got out of the Ford. Tall, heavy, dark-skinned, also foreign. They all stood together in the gloom. Vincent didn't automatically think the 5 men were there for him. There could be other reasons. His lot was the only stopping place for miles. Plenty of drivers used it for all kinds of purposes. Passers-by, checking their maps, taking off their coats, getting things from the trunk, sometimes just stretching their legs. It was private property, no question, properly deeded, but it was used almost like a public facility, like a regular roadside turnout. He watched. The 5 men were talking. His windows were ordinary commercial items, chosen by his parents in 1969. They were screened on the inside and opened outward with little winding handles. Vincent thought about opening the one he was standing behind, just a crack. It was almost an obligation. He might hear what the 5 men were saying. He might get valuable information for the phone tree. Everyone was expected to contribute. That was how the system worked. So he started to turn the handle, slowly, a little at a time. At first it went easily, but then it jammed. The casement was stuck to the insulating strip, paint and grime and long disuse. He used finger and thumb and tried to ease some steady pressure into it. He wanted to pop it loose gently. He didn't want to make a loud plastic sound. The 5 men were still talking. Or rather, the man from the Cadillac was talking, and the other 4 were listening. Mahmani's man was saying, "I let my partner out a mile back. He's going to work behind the lines. He's more used to me that way. Pincer movements are always best." Roberto Cassano said, "Is he going to coordinate with the rest of us?"
"Of course he is.
What else would he do? We're a team, aren't we?
You should have kept him around. We need to make a plan first.
For this? We don't need to make a plan. It's just flushing a guy out. How hard can it be? You said it yourself. The locals will help.
They're all asleep.
We'll wake them up. With a bit of luck, we'll get it done before morning.
And then what?
Then we'll spend the day leaning on the Duncans. We all need that delivery, and since we all had to drag ourselves up here, we might as well all spend our time on what's important.
So where do we start?
You tell me. You've spent time here.
The doctor, Cassano said. He's the weakest link. Machmany's man said,
So, where's the doctor?
South and west of here.
Okay. Go talk to him.
I'll go somewhere else.
Why? Because if you know he's the weakest link, then so does Reacher. Dollars to donuts, he ain't there. So you go waste your time, and I'll go do some work.
Vincent gave up on cracking the window. He could tell there was no way it would open without a ripping sound, and drawing attention right then would not be a good idea. And the impromptu conference in his lot was breaking up anyway. The small, rumpled man slid back into Seth Duncan's Cadillac, and the big black car crunched through a wide arc over the gravel. Its headlight beams swept across Vincent's window. He ducked just in time. Then the Cadillac turned left on the two-lane and took off south. The other four men stayed right where they were. They watched until the Cadillac's taillights were lost to sight, and then they turned back and started talking again, face to face, in pairs, each one of them with his right hand in his right-hand coat pocket, for some strange reason, all four of them symmetrical, like a formal tableau. Roberto Cassano watched the Cadillac go and said,
He doesn't have a partner. There's nobody working behind the lines.
What lines, anyway? It's all bullshit.
Safir's main man said, Of course he has a partner. We all saw him right there in your room.
He's gone. He ran out. He took whatever car they rented. That guy's on his own now. He stole that Cadillac from the lot. We saw it there earlier.
No reply.
Cassano said, Unless... One of you had a hand in it.
Or both of you.